Hello. Welcome to our fourth panel today, entitled Myth and American Medium. My name's Grace. I'm a PhD candidate in the History Department. And we have four speakers today delivering three very interesting papers. First of all, we have Adam Gallimore, who is a PhD candidate in the Department of Film and Television Studies here at Warwick. He's currently completing his AHRC-funded project, Historical Reassessment in Contemporary American Cinema, with a particular emphasis on digital technologies. Next, we have Colin Lieberg, who is a second-year PhD candidate in the History Department at Warwick. His thesis is entitled A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You, American and British Cross-Cultural Influence and Exchange During the British Invasion. And our final paper, we have two speakers, Andrew Hammond, whose current research into the discourse on freedom in US policy towards Afghanistan, and I believe he's recently submitted his PhD thesis. and Thomasin Bailey, who has an MA in English Literature here at Warwick, and is currently research assistant to Dr. Paul Botley, helping him in his edition on James Shirley's Latin grammars, and is starting a PhD in September. So we'll start with Adam. Thank you.
James, a dominant figure in American culture who exceeds the boundaries of our traditional conception of the historical or cinematic work. It's therefore worth examining how he's been constructed in a variety of texts in order to reveal their function as social processes. And in this manner, this study is similar to that taken by British critic Tony Bennett concerning the cultural formation of James Bond. He states, rather than requiring that the text be regarded as a completed given, which is to be studied on its own terms, it directs attention to the history of its use, of its perpetual remaking and transformation, in the light of its inscription into a variety of different material, social, institutional, and ideological contexts. I'll be discussing three films today in order to explore the cultural representation and mythologies of Jesse James. The 1939 Jesse James, starring Tyrone Power, Nicholas Ray's 1957 version, The True Story of Jesse James, with Robert Wagner, and the most recent telling, Andrew Dominik's The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford, with Brad Pitt as James and Casey Affleck as Ford. One of the main reasons why Jesse James is such an intriguing, significant, and enduring cultural figure is that he's closer to a fictional character than a historical one. The study of Jesse James requires a form of inquiry sensitive to issues of context and process, especially as the James phenomenon is not the result of any originating text and is not traceable back to a single source. R.F. Dibble, in a 1931 biography of James, says of his cultural articulation, he left hardly a single authenticated account of himself, and the hundreds of records that were penned about him have in great part disappeared. Of the few that are still extant, there are two species, those of idolizing relatives and mawkish hero worshippers, or those of malignant enemies and pseudo-reformers who keenly realize the financial opportunities that lay in inverted hagiologies. The same sort of divisions can be made when reviewing Jesse James's realizations in film, and these texts represent three alternate approaches to an American icon. Time-honored elements develop the resonance of iconicity, connoting an image that, in the words of Jim Kitz's, both records and carries a conceptual and emotional weight, drawn from a defined symbolic field, a tradition. So I'll start by looking at The True Story of Jesse James, a film whose title is willingly contradictory. Firstly, it acknowledges that it is itself a variation of a familiar narrative, thus recognizing its intertextual dependence on other James stories. Secondly, the title's emphasis on the authenticity of its narrative differentiates it from less accurate accounts and marks it as the definitive versioning of the outlaw's life. While the film's opening spiel proclaims that much that you will see here is fact and much is as close to what actually happened as any man can testify, rather than being based on historical accounts, it was in fact an adaptation of Nunnally Johnson's screenplay for the 1939 Jesse James, a film much less dedicated to verisimilitude. Christopher Anderson sees the film as not primarily concerned with the material events in the life of Jesse James, but is more a film about the process of telling James stories and about the transformation of James into a cultural figure. So there's this turn to self-reflexivity, an awareness of Jesse James as a cultural icon, one that is both malleable and transformative. The film is a conscious attack on the story's classical form, most notably its predecessor. And while it recognizes its heritage in the tradition of James stories, it positions itself in opposition to previous versions by approaching the legend with ironic detachment thereby operating both as a pastiche of earlier James films and a revisionist critique of them. The film also presupposes prior knowledge in the viewer, which allows for its non-linear structure, although it does afford some overly deliberate exposition, such as this scene at the beginning of the film.
If you please, Mr. Wiley, I'll have the obituary now. Mr. Wiley, sir, the Jesse James obituary, if you don't mind.
Has the work come? Have you caught up with them?
No, but they say they're closer than they've been this whole week. Well, just touch up one of these old obituaries you wrote. The Times has reported killed before.
What's the key to them, Peter?
This one, about the war setting them on the path of violence. Write this one again.
You and I are in the war, too.
This one, about his being like Robin Hood. This is a good one.
I'm bored with this sort of nonsense.
Well, you're not leaving. Well, the obituary man, the obituary.
They haven't killed him yet.
Well, they may at any moment. And what do you say to the boss?
What I've been saying to myself all night. What makes him Jesse James?
So, in a fascinating comment on the process of forming a biographical position, the newspaper editor here rejects the existing obituaries of James prepared for him by his typesetter, an action that offers the first indication of the film's reflexive concerns. The editor's questioning response, "What makes him Jesse James?" mirrors the self-conscious impulse of the news reporter in Citizen Kane, who says, "It isn't enough to show what a man did, you've got to tell us who he was." And it's this that initiates the film's flashback structure. By the mid-50s, James could be appreciated as a cultural phenomenon, and thus true stories serve to revivify the figure for a particular generation, its articulation being closely tied to its period of production. Anderson argues that the film's take on the James myth should be recognized as a form of social practice, emphasizing through its dialogic interaction with other texts how it represents one historically conditioned argument in an ongoing ideological debate that finds a voice through the struggle to define its cultural figure. The cultural appeal of the James story depends on its polysemic aspects, with its conflicting discourses making it available for constant rearticulation. Seen in these terms, the assassination of Jesse James provides an expedient example of the recent ideological positions that have been put forth and articulated through this familiar mythology. The film's title is rhetorically self-effacing, refraining from emphasizing its novelty or its veracity. It does not depend on an awareness of previous James films, but locates the text more centrally within a historical framework that stresses the significance of Bob Ford within the James myth. It is less formulaic than previous James films, being unconstrained by a defined structure or limited set of story elements, and can therefore take a fresh approach in its exploration of the James myth. So while Anderson puts forth a system of cultural cannibalization with regards to the retelling of the Jesse James story, wherein each film must at some level acknowledge its position in the story's historical development and internalize aspects of previous versions, transforming them to fit its own unique demands, this film is significantly distanced from this period of production. Consequently, its articulation of the James story, while touching on some key themes and narrative elements, is further dissociated from this tendency towards intertextual hybridity. And this distancing allows for a more objective discourse concerning the figure's mythological construction. Narratively, the assassination of Jesse James omits the formative section traditionally found in the biographical structure that details his transformation into an outlaw. Whereas the archetypal Jesse James narrative frames his life around issues of the Civil War, this film shares a demythological impulse with Samuel Fuller's 1949 film I Shot Jesse James, in eschewing this inaccurate and simplistic explanation for his motivations or actions. While the other films demonstrate the aesthetic prowess of Technicolor and CinemaScope, The Assassination of Jesse James draws inspiration from daguerreotype 19th century photography and from the realist painting style of artists such as Andrew Wyeth, resulting in a bleak, aniric aesthetic with muted tones, light diffraction, and color aberration around the borders of the frame, which evokes the sepia tinting and blurring of the photography of the Old West. This emphasizes a shift away from a cinematic, mythologized aesthetic to a more historically minded visual style. Brad Pitt's portrayal of Jesse James is of an almost thoroughly unlikable character, bringing into context what we take from previous cinematic depictions and our familiarity with Pitt as a Hollywood star. Given his centrality to Western mythology, it's unusual that James becomes such a spectral, near-supernatural force. He's depicted as a volatile and barbaric man in an increasingly civilized world, with his conversations layered with menacing insinuations and elliptical threats. Yet his villainy makes him more alluring, more human in spite of his flaws, and As with other versions of the story, the film plays up the contradictions of his character. So this complex relationship between Ford and James is favoured over the traditional focus on the relationship with his brother Frank, or his domestic life with his wife Z, which have formed the basis of previous versions. In this core relationship, the gaze of Robert Ford is of particular interest, as he develops this obsession for Jesse James through the largely fictionalized accounts of the James Younger Gang's exploits. Ford could be read as the prototypical celebrity stalker, driven by obsession and desire, and yet disheartened upon learning that the man's legend is largely a fabrication. Ford aspires to these bandit fantasies, but his self-delusion transforms into resentment and jealousy, following the realization that his quixotic perception of James is far removed from the man himself. So let's take a quick look at one of their interactions in the film.
I can't believe I woke up this morning wondering if my dad was going to be killed because here it is, just bastard, and I'm already robbed the railroad train. I'm sitting in a rocket chair chatting with my mother, Jesse James.
It's wonderful.
Oh! What's this? Oh yeah, because I was real agitated this morning. I was wondering if I would know you or Frank to tell you all apart. And so I had this clip to describe you both. Want me to read it?
Go on.
Well,
I got a plan.
Jesse James, the youngest, has a face as sweet and innocent as a schoolgirl. Blue eyes, very clear and penetrating. I never understood. His form is tall and graceful and capable of great endurance and great effort. Jesse is lighthearted, reckless, and devil may care. There is always a smile on his lips and our eyes. Well, yeah, he's Frank. My eyes open, my mouth open, reading about your escapades and the wide awake library.
So Robert Ford is a character with an insatiable fascination with the media of the West, in particular the dime novels and newspaper clippings about Jesse and his band of outlaws. Jesse's treatment of his celebrity status is curious in his awareness of his legend, yet he disaffirms it in private, claiming these stories are all lies. The perpetuation of the Jesse James myth through this propagation of images and stories reflects how characters, according to Richard Dyer, perform Westernness, where the West is put on. This sense of performativity comes full circle in the film's epilogue with the Ford Brothers' Manhattan Theatre Show, in which they reenacted the assassination of James over 800 times. In this manner, the film's meditation on celebrity encompasses not only the effect of James's star status, but also the notoriety that came Ford's way as he was eventually consumed by the legacy of the legend he both destroyed and helped create. So this brings us to the murder itself. And when it comes to this action, each film deals with the formulaic components of the assassination scene differently. While in earlier forms, his outlaw existence was condoned by transforming him into a Western Robin Hood, a defender of the oppressed and fighter against corruption and capitalist expansion, this heroic existence was only cemented by the mythological nature of his death. In Jesse James here, the God Bless Our Home wall sampler exemplifies the James family's secure domesticity, though Jesse's removal of it, as he's shot by Robert Ford, is an action that signals his family's move to California in order to make a new start. The equivalent scene in True Story is structured around the assumption that the audience is familiar with the ritual of Jesse's execution. Instead of the traditional sampler, this time reading Home Sweet Home, which is pictured on the wall behind him as he converses with the Ford brothers, James reaches for one reading Hard Work Spells Success when he's shot and killed. Not only does this suggest a favoring of his profession over his domestic life, but it also provides an ideal coda for the film's ironic revisionist critique of the James story. In the assassination of Jesse James, the violent denouement avoids the ubiquitous presence of the piece of needlework as a signifier, replacing it with a painting of a racehorse. This deviation from traditional iconographic representation underlines the film's more factual recounting of events and alignment with authenticity. And by elongating and detailing the act itself, the film implicates its audience in the character's actions while posing a question concerning the celebration of and dedication to an ultimately self-destructive cultural phenomenon. So in conclusion, this brief comparative account demonstrates that while the 1939 Jesse James was this highly reverential telling of the James tale, True Story is a more self-conscious version, examining the means by which a culture attempts to understand a popular figure of this kind. The assassination of Jesse James points to its predecessors as alternately naive in its reverential mythologizing and willfully nonchalant in an attempt to form a more accurate and complete retelling through narrative complexity and cultural allegory. It is intrigued by the social aspects of identity, favoring an investigation of the nature of celebrity through the hero-worship relationship of Ford and James over the concept of performance and role-playing covered in Ray's version. While it delves further in its critique of modern celebrity culture, it also condemns the failure of approaches that simply impose a conventional narrative model on the familiar events of James's life. These models, it seems, are always inadequate to the subject, as they each distort the outlaw's life according to its own designs rather than explaining it. The approach of the assassination of Jesse James seems to undermine John Cowalty's belief that the highly conventionalized tradition of the Western does not encourage new interpretations of the American past. The film attempts to discredit previous mythological versions by making it both historically and psychologically nuanced, setting up Jesse James as an anomalous individual, one of conflict and paradox. In doing so, it considers the complex myth of Jesse James in such a light as to challenge the social reaffirmation of myth itself. So when it comes to choosing whether to print the legend or the fact, in the case of Jesse James, it would appear as though the fact cannot be privileged, as it simply does not exist. Instead, he is a cultural creation, one used for different purposes but tied to an ambivalent historical setting. By refusing to authorize any individual articulation, the James phenomenon emphasizes the fact that each rendering of the man may be resisted, amended, or transformed by its cultural context. Thank you.